I must admit, as I write this today, that I was wrong. This doesn't happen often, me admitting I'm wrong, I mean, and so historical notation might be suggested. You see, I've been studying the law, constitutional, maritime, universal commercial code, which is UCC, common law, etc., and I'm absolutely astounded at what I've uncovered. I've learned there is a huge difference between what is lawful and what is legal. I've learned that the courts must always follow the law above what is legal. And I've learned that the courts, judges, attorneys, and even police officers usually follow legal procedure, but not necessarily the law. What does this all mean? Well, to put it simply, it means the difference between what is right and what is privilege. It means the difference between living as a free man with God-given rights and living as an indentured, indebted, corporate slave with privileges granted by the state. It means that any one of us at any time can use the law to release ourselves from legal requirements and legal but not lawful debt. And this is the very thing I was wrong about. For in my previous post, I did not understand the full extent of the law, nor of the corporate structure of not only the U.S. government, but of our very lives and how they relate to this corporate government. And so I'm going to rectify that now. By understanding the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reporting System, the CAFR, and how all corporations, including our own government, must report their monetary holdings and investments, you will then be able to understand what I'm about to tell you now. And my apologies to anyone who thought that I had belittled this information with my previous post, but with the disclaimer that I still believe that this free man status depends on the current system of government to be in place for the protection of these basic God-given rights until such system be replaced or removed with a viable replacement. That simply being the true Republic of America, kicking out the corporation that has us all in a stranglehold through taxation, collateral, and debt. On that note, I'd like to share what I've learned about what freedom actually is, and what the constitutional liberties and the pursuit of that freedom that most of us take for granted really means. Let's start with a little history lesson that came as quite a shock to me. This country is in its fourth bankruptcy since its humble beginnings. Huh? The first bankruptcy was officially declared in 1791. This was a time of many changes in America. Perhaps most notable of these was the signing of the Bill of Rights, representing the first 10 amendments to and the final passing of the Constitution for the United States, which happened December 15th of that year, shortly after our first bankruptcy. This is, of course, significant as our God-given rights are solely dependent on this document, though they were generally accepted as common law rights throughout the world long before America existed. During each bankruptcy, a war is fought, the Revolutionary War in this case, and a new form of currency is always established, since the old one became essentially worthless in the new corporate restructure of each bankruptcy. With the new country came new money. Several monetary systems were proposed for the early Republic of America. Congress approved the first dollar on August 8, 1786. Once passage of the U.S. Constitution was secured, and the first bankruptcy and restructuring was in motion, the Secretary of the Treasury at the time, Alexander Hamilton, turned the government's attention to monetary issues once again in the early 1790s. On Hamilton's recommendations, Congress passed the Coinage Act of 1792, which established the dollar as the basic unit of accounting for the United States. At this point, the dollar was still backed by gold. The second bankruptcy took place exactly 70 years later, in 1861. Now, the main reason for this is that the restructuring that takes place in a bankruptcy can, by law, only last for 70 years without being settled. And so, in 1861, the country was declared bankrupt once again. Of course, there was much more to this planned event in history, as carpetbaggers claimed and stole the land of southern property owners, and the banks and governments bought up land and farmland for pennies on the dollar. The Civil War broke out in this year when the southern states began to say no to the northern government and these carpetbaggers. This is often referred to by southern states especially as the War of Northern Aggression, and most southerners will also say that there was certainly nothing civil about the Civil War. And this is quite true when considering that the government is housed in the north, British Columbia and Washington, D.C., and that their aggression was the takeover and corporate restructuring of America. This was not a war over slavery, to be sure, and the assassination of Abraham Lincoln happened only after his attempt to depose the central banking structure and establish greenbacks, congressionally printed and controlled money. But in 1863, during the American Civil War, the National Banking Act was passed. This act and its later amended versions essentially taxed states' bonds and currency out of existence. And so through corporate government legislation in the newly reorganized country, the dollar became the sole currency of the United States, which was still backed by metals then, and remains so in an altered and worthless form today. And now we come to the third bankruptcy in our country's history, which was 70 years later in 1931. This was the big one. This was the time after the Industrial Revolution when population, lawful immigration, jobs, and opportunity were in abundance. The money system was still in real money, meaning trade was done in precious metals like gold and silver coins. Even the paper money was backed by and redeemable for gold and silver at its face value. But as the anticipated bankruptcy loomed closer and closer, steps were taken by the government to ensure that a new restructuring of the country could take place, ensuring the same bankers and corporate crooks would remain in power. The stock market was deliberately crashed, and the Great Depression ensued. The population was broke, and their land and property was once again bought for pennies on the dollar by the banks and newly reorganized government. Transfer of wealth is the name of the game, and a new game is played every 70 years. But during 1933 and 1938, as the reorganization of our government and finance laws took place, after most small banks were deliberately collapsed and fell into the holdings of larger banks, a very important thing happened that changed the landscape of our nation. The gold standard was removed and replaced by the Federal Reserve note, the dollar. The House of Representatives accomplished this when they passed House Joint Resolution 192. This new legislation actually outlawed the use of real money, gold and silver, to pay a debt, actually making it illegal to require real money to pay for a debt. The dollar, now called the Federal Reserve Note, became legal tender and was backed by the supposed full faith and credit of the United States government. However, this paper money, or fiat currency, was in fact worthless due to the absence of real money backing its value. The dollar is nothing more than an IOU, and only has value if both parties in an exchange verbally or contractually accept it as payment for goods and services, while remaining under the illusion or blind faith that the government or institution which issues this paper has the power, wealth, and credit to back up this currency. In fact, a few years after this third restructure of the United States, the government mandated the confiscation of all gold from its citizens, and the transfer of land, property, and real wealth was accomplished yet again. Many people say that World War II is what seemingly brought the U.S. out of the Great Depression. In fact, many people recognize that, in the past, America usually prospers in time of war and shortly thereafter. Flash forward another 70 years, and it's now 2001. People are prospering, goods and services are in abundance, the world was at peace, excepting the military black ops and economic hitman type of destabilization of many countries for strategic and natural resource confiscation. Now, any good conspiracy buff might note the interesting and overwhelming coincidence in this being the year of the fourth restructuring of our corporate government. Indeed, one might be even more aghast when one realizes that the anniversary of the last bankruptcy from 70 years ago was in fact September 10th, 1931. Or the day before the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings 1, 2, and 7, along with the supposed attack on the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. War is both a great distraction and a profitable venture for the corporate world governments, and this obviously isn't the first time war or false flag events have been used in this manner, as a tool for the restructuring of the U.S. government. And we have watched over the last 9 years as the dollar crashed, as the real estate and property bubbles burst and are once again being taken over by our government and banks in a typical transfer of wealth, a complete corporate takeover of the country, which started about 70 years ago with the introduction of the CAFR system, which is now culminating into the nation being completely owned through collective investment by the government-owned corporations, we are about to see the dollar become completely worthless right before our eyes, if it isn't already, and a new form of U.S. currency or World Bank currency will likely take its place, right on schedule. This is the real U.S. history that isn't in your textbooks. Okay, so let's talk about this corporate structure of government. If you haven't learned about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, CAFR, and how it is used in corporation and corporate government reporting, see my article about it here. And to see what I'm apologizing about, with disclaimer, go here. Also, to learn from the man himself, Mr. Walter Burian, go to CAFR1.com. These resources explain and prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the U.S. government is indeed a corporation which owns most major and Fortune 500 corporations, most of the country's land, utilities, municipalities, parks, golf courses, malls, movie theaters, and so on and so forth. But let's talk about who or what the U.S. government really is, besides the most powerful corporation in the world. So what is the United States of America? This is the name of the country in which we all live. It is a collection of 50 unified yet sovereign individual states which make up the Union of the Republic of the United States of America. So what is the United States in all capital letters? Now here's where it gets tricky. You see, when a corporation is created, it is always and without exception created using an all capital letter name. Thus, while we all live in the United States of America, we are bound by the government of this country, which is the Corporation of the United States, in all capital letters. For reference, and so that there is no doubt of this being true, as we continue down the rabbit hole, the definition of the United States, in all capital letters, is in Black's Law Dictionary, and it says it's a corporation. Also, you can look at the United States Code. This being in all capital letters due to its corporate structure representing the codes of the United States Corporation. The code is U.S. Code Title 28-3002-15-A-B-C. These codes state that the United States is unequivocally a corporation. Now, we live in the United States of America, but we do commerce and follow the regulations, statutes, and legalities, which are not actually laws, of the corporate United States, for which we are born or birthed into as debtors and are used as the collateral of this corporation. We are all used as collateral for the government, the corporation, of the United States, in all capital letters, as stated by our birth certificate. Because you are a corporate entity of this trust and not a sovereign individual of the Republic, you are susceptible to things like selective service, the draft, income tax, property tax, many other unlawful taxes which only go to fund the corporation and do not in any way fund public interests or services, and other unlawful statutes and rules which again are not actual laws, like CPS, which is Child Protection Services, which is in the business of kidnapping children. And they even get bonuses for blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids, which is why there is such a high turnover rate in that particular job. Now, wait a minute. Why am I a corporate entity of the United States? Basically, when my mother and father were married, they signed a marriage contract and received a marriage certificate or license, as did yours and everyone else's parents, and as did you when and if you were married. If you still have yours, you should get it out and read it. It clearly states that the product of this union belongs to the United States. All capital letters. What does this mean, a product of the United States? It means that your children are the property of the United States. It means that your parents, their parents, your children, and your children's children are or will be a vessel of commerce that is owned by the United States Corporation. You are an indentured corporate debt slave who is assigned as collateral for the good faith and credit of the United States as soon as you are born. Now bear with me. When you are born, you are assigned a corporate number. Actually, because the United States commerce laws are in maritime law and UCC code, you are really berthed, very much like a ship at sea is berthed into a U.S. port and assigned a number of import. Your birth certificate is that contract. It is a contract that is assigned to you as a product of the union of your mother and father, and it indoctrinates you into the United States as collateral and assigns you a trust account in which all of your credit and debt is assigned and allotted. If you'd like to verify this is accurate, I would invite you to try and retrieve your original birth certificate from the United States government. You'll notice that no matter how many times you try, and no matter how much you insist, you will never ever be able to attain the original document that is your birth certificate. You are, however, imbued the privilege of receiving a certified copy of said certificate. Your original certificate is housed in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., in the 10-mile stretch of land which is the Corporation of the United States. Now understand, too, that Washington, D.C. is not part of the United States of America, and is a corporate structure completely separate from the rest of the country. In short, it is not, and never has been, one of the 50 United States of America. The average citizen of the United States is assigned a value when he or she is born, for collateral and credit purposes. After years of inflation, that trust value is up to about $7 million or so at birth. If you'd like to verify how much you are worth as a corporate entity of the United States, simply take your birth certificate number into your local stockbroker and ask him to look up your number. We also receive a Social Security number, a corporate number, for which we conduct trade and commerce and are allowed the privilege to start a business with, and with which we are legally but not necessarily lawfully taxed. Oh, let's slow down a minute. Well, what is the difference between lawful and legal? This is very important to understand. Law, God's law, whether you believe in God or not, is to do no harm to others or to their property. This is the basic definition of law. It is also the definition of freedom, for all men are free under God's law in the United States of America until the point where we break that law. You cannot break the law unless there is a living victim for which you do harm or do harm to their property. The word legal or illegal is a corporate term used to represent a state of being when related to statutes, rules, codes, mandates, and posted limits that are assigned to you by the United States. All capital letters, the corporation. While something can be unlawful, it can be legal. But remember, law always trumps legality. In the case of something being illegal, no living victim is required under corporate legality, and so the state, the corporate state, assumes the role of the victim. More on this in a minute. Another important aspect of this is to know the difference between these two things. The Constitution for the United States. This is the original document and Declaration of Independence that was written by our founders, our forefathers, the one that is talked about by everybody. This is not to be confused with the Constitution of the United States. Now, this is a legal corporate document that was created by a treasonous Congress in the Act of 1871, and which the United States continues to fool us all into believing is the same document that our forefathers wrote for our God-given independence. I assure you, it is not. It is a corporate document for a corporation that operates outside of actual constitutional law. The Constitution of the United States, in all capital letters, is the legal corporate document created by a treasonous Congress in 1871. Now, if all of this is alien or too hard to comprehend, believe me, I understand. I was there. But an easy way to show you how in the matrix you really are is this. Go get your wallet, any contracts that you've signed, like cell phone or rental, any bills you have which originated with the signed contract or with your social security number, and take out any credit cards or other forms of ID. Now look at your name. Notice it is in all capital letters. I remember the first time someone pointed this out to me, how amazed I was. And pissed off. This is your straw man, unnatural commerce corporate name. Remember, all corporate entities have this capital letter naming structure. This represents the trust account that was assigned to you at birth. When you were born, when you were birthed. And when you were assigned a Social Security number. This is why the United States on your marriage and birth certificate, as well as your name, is printed in all capital letters. It's To prove this is true, you can simply take your birth certificate to a stockbroker and have him look up the value of your straw man corporate number, the number on your birth certificate, as I said. You will find that you, or at least your corporate trust, is worth millions or billions of dollars. And if you learn how, you can access that trust account and eliminate all of your debt lawfully through the legal system, since that debt was a trick of contract by the lending institutions that have already sold that contract, but only if you declare your sovereignty. You must take the steps to declare yourself a sovereign individual and declare yourself a secured party creditor. But you have a lot of studying to do first, and I'll update this site as I progress. What does this declaration of sovereignty do? What benefits does it have? Whoa, too many to list here, and to be honest, I haven't learned them all, but here's one I can't wait to practice. Say I run a red light or make an illegal U-turn, and a police officer pulls me over. I simply hand him my UCC paperwork and give him no more than 10 minutes to verify the authenticity of the paperwork and let me go. Because I have declared myself sovereign and immune from the Corporation of the United States and its rules and regulations, I'm not bound by these rules and regulations, nor the fees or taxes assigned to the violation of them. Lawful and legal are two completely different concepts. I am only bound by God's law, which is defined as doing anything you want as long as you don't do any damage to another individual or his or her property. A victim. In the case of making an illegal U-turn, I have not broken God's law, and there is no living soul as a victim. Therefore, a police officer that works for the corporate state, the United States, has no power or jurisdiction over me as a sovereign individual. The victim must be a living, breathing human. But in the case of traffic rules, the victim is the corporate state, and therefore no individual human being was involved. In other words, no one was harmed by my actions, and so I cannot be detained or fined, which just means taxed, according to the law, which trumps corporate legality. There are no victimless crimes. Remember that. The kicker is, the reason this is so is because I am, on this day, not a legal driver, but a lawful traveler. Semantics are everything. My driver's license is a permit, not a right, but a privilege to drive for corporate reasons. As in a company car with you being the subcorporation under the main corporation, the United States. But as a sovereign individual with God-given rights as afforded by the Constitution for the United States, not the Constitution of the United States, as a sovereign individual, I am a traveler who is lawfully traveling in the United States of America and not a driver who is driving under the corporate auspices and legal permission of the United States. And so, if the cop detains me unlawfully, meaning more than 10 minutes, or harasses me in any way by unlawful but legal under straw man names, search and seizure, or slander, I can, as a sovereign, not a straw man, but a sovereign individual, take the cop to court in what is called a negative averment and sue him for his bond, which can be millions of dollars, at which point he will never be able to be bonded again, meaning he can never be an unlawful yet legal cop again. The same holds true with judges and attorneys, who are legal entities that are bonded by the courts and have no jurisdiction over you in said court unless you are still representing and using only your all-capital name, your straw man. If your case is not immediately dismissed, you can sue them for their bonds and they will not be attorneys or judges ever again. By the way, judges are nothing more than glorified attorneys and therefore have the same bond issuance. You can take their bond as well. What I'm telling you is that the police, the courts, and their judges have no power or jurisdiction over you, a sovereign individual, and actually you have a higher power than them and can control them, but only if you declare your sovereignty. Everyone else is under their power and jurisdiction simply because they acknowledge that they are in fact the corporate representative of the... all capital letter straw man name that is on their contracts, licenses, and IDs. The ones you just looked at. Let's talk about attorneys. Attorneys are cockroaches. They are what you might refer to as corporate yes men. And you know what? About 70% of our politicians and legislators are bar attorneys. So what does it mean to be an attorney that is a member of the Bar Association? They are employees of the court system, the corporation of the United States, and have loyalty only to the courts. They are sworn by oath to uphold the procedure, not the constitutional law, of the court system first, always above your needs. They are there to assure that the court doesn't make a mistake in its legal procedures where you might win your case. And they are there to ensure continued taxation by fees and decisions. Never hire a bar attorney. By accepting a bar attorney to represent you in court, you are literally assigning all of your rights away and admitting incompetence to represent yourself, making you a ward of the court due to mental incapacity. The only exception is an attorney who is not a member of the Bar Association. But what will really blow your mind, and the most devastating element of a bar attorney, is this. The Bar Association is located in London, England. Even more scary is that the small part of London that houses Parliament, the House of Commons, the Crown, and the Bar Association is not a part of England or London, but a completely separate state. Or a country, a corporation, as is Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, and the Vatican in Rome, all independent corporate states. This ultimately means that an attorney takes an oath to the Queen or the Crown of England, meaning the Queen and all that she represents. And since judges aren't really judges and are actually attorneys, you know where their loyalty lies as well. And remember, 70% of our higher government officials are attorneys who have sworn allegiance to the crown, who owns the United States and runs the Bar Association. Now, the original 13th Amendment to the Constitution for the United States says, if any citizen of the United States, notice it's not capitalized, shall accept, claim, receive or retain any title of nobility or honor, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present, pension, office, or emolument or payment of any kind whatsoever from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States, the country that we live in, and shall be incapable of holding any office or trust or profit under them, or either of them. That's powerful stuff. This was originally written in 1810. Much debate has ensued on whether this amendment was ratified or not. Most constitutional scholars say yes and point to the Senate's journal for proof of its ratification. Of course, after reading this amendment, who would say no? The answer is the corporation that is running the show, whose loyalties and oaths lay with the Crown and Queen of England, and not with the people under the United States Constitution. The 13th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States is the Abolition of Slavery Amendment. But remember, this is not the real Constitution for the United States, which serves the Republic of America and by which all sovereign individuals who live in God-given freedom adhere to. So, I guess it's up to you to decide which one of these constitutions to follow. And in making the choice to be free, there is only really one choice. For more opinion and fact on the 13th Amendment, including a list of politicians and other prominent figures who have taken titles of nobility to the Queen and other countries, And that's including George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan, Generals Colin Powell and Norman Schwarzkopf, Alan Greenspan, Rudy Giuliani, and many, many more. See my rant here. On a different note, I'd like to give you another reason to declare your sovereignty. But to really understand, we must go back to the subject of money again. The question, how is money created? Now, movies like Zeitgeist are great tools for waking up people to the realities of the monetary system and its ownership by the private central banks that make up the Federal Reserve. The fractional reserve system indeed allows the banks to create money out of thin air. But this is only part of reality. For the way money is really created is quite astounding, and guaranteed to piss off a lot of honest taxpaying people. Here we go. Do you own a home, a car? Do you have a credit card or a student loan? Well, all of these different types of debt began with you filling out a promissory note, a contract. When this is submitted to the bank, and after an approval process, you receive that money by signing this contract. And the bank tells you quite dishonestly that you owe them a debt for that amount of money, and gives you permission to amortize the payment of that loan over a set amount of time, usually 30 years or so for a mortgage. But they also charge you interest for this convenient service. That means that by the end of that 30 years, you'll probably have paid double, if not triple, what the actual loan amount was at the signing of the original contract or promissory note. But there is one thing that the bank is not telling you. Well, there's many. But one very, very big piece of the puzzle. Are you ready? According to the Federal Reserve banks, and printed in their banking rulebooks, money is created when a person, or you, signs a contract, a promissory note, with a bank. Huh? Let me explain. Last year, I remember hearing about a campaign to protect people from foreclosure by these banks and mortgage companies called Show Me the Note. At the time, I did not understand the significance of this simple but effective and protective statement. Now I do. Show me the note is quite a valid request. It simply means that you are requesting the original contract or promissory note that was signed by yourself and the foreclosing bank when the money was created and given to you to buy your home. But you see, the bank cannot ever produce this note, and here's why. The bank sells your note, the promissory note or deed, to the Federal Reserve the minute you sign it. And the Fed then gives that bank the amount that it then loans to you. Therefore, the bank is at a balance of $0 at the point of inception and payment for your loan. Remember, this is how money is created according to the Federal Reserve banking rules and regulations. The problem that these banks have is that they no longer hold the note or title to your home, because they have already sold it at face value to the Federal Reserve. And in order for a creditor, the bank, to make a claim against the debtor, which is you, they must, in a court of law, show proof of their claim to collect your supposed debt to them. However, the only proof of their claim for the foreclosure of your home is, in fact, that original note, the promise to pay, the promissory note that you signed, which created the money that enabled the bank to give you that loan in the first place. Money out of thin air. Remember, money is created only when you or I sign a contract to get credit. It is the very fact that all of this information is not disclosed to us that makes this contract null and void. Full disclosure must accompany any contract by law, lest it be invalid and unlawful. Listen. Your loan contract got sold to the Federal Reserve, a private corporate central bank, by the bank or mortgage company with whom you signed your contract with. It's gone, vanished, paid off. The Federal Reserve then bundles these deeds or contracts and sells them as securities and bonds to countries like China, Russia, and whoever else will buy them. So in essence, China may already own the title to your home. Or at least it thinks it does. And this is why the bank has no lawful grounds to foreclose on you. They do not hold a lawful lien on your home. You owe nothing to anybody. You created that money legally through the bank and Federal Reserve by accessing your trust account assigned to you by the United States when they took your freedom and liberty and put your wealth and property at risk starting on the day you were born, when you were birthed into the corporation. So the principal and the interest you pay to the bank is pure profit for the next 30 years, because you signed a contract saying that you would pay that amount with your home and land as collateral. But remember, for a contract to be lawful, there must be full disclosure of these little facts. Since this was obviously not disclosed to you, all of these mortgages and other contracts are null and void. The bank has no contract, no proof of claim against your debt, and no rights to force you to pay them anything. If this sounds to you like a cop-out from paying your bills, remember that the bank never risked anything. They never gave you a penny of their own money. You did a favor to the banking system by creating new money. You created commerce, nothing more. And you are entitled to this money, worthless paper used for commerce, as an indentured citizen of the United States who is used as collateral and assigned this value at birth. And remember, due to the fractional reserve banking system created by the Federal Reserve, the Fed creates 40 times the amount of your loan for its use, again making money out of thin air. I hope that you're beginning to understand that this is another of the biggest scams in the history of scams, and that all bank loans, from credit cards to student loans to mortgages, work in this same exact way, secured or unsecured. Again, this is how money is created into the economy, per the rules of the Federal Reserve Bank, the private corporation, unaffiliated with our government or our nation, who control our monetary policy and can destroy the value of the dollar at any time they choose. Do you really feel guilty about reclaiming your piece of the pie? The only way to truly benefit from this freedom is by declaring your individual God-given rights of sovereignty through a UCC Universal Commercial Code filing. You must offset your debt lawfully as afforded you. You must become a secured party creditor. And if you go to the end of this rant, you'll be able to see where you can learn how to do this. I cringe when I hear people say that they aren't going to fight the system and instead are going to give up their house. They feel hopeless. They feel like they can't win. But the truth is that there was never anything to lose. The bank has no claim. But I understand. Most will not buck the system simply because they do not understand the system and how the Constitution for the United States was set up to ensure that this type of unlawful action, like bank foreclosure, can never be done to us. It took me a very long time to come to this comprehension. This is how freedom works, and it only works if you claim it. This is the forbidden knowledge. CAFRs are the forbidden knowledge. I guess for me, it boils down to this. What is an education? If an education is defined as 4 years of partying and getting drunk in a frat house while barely passing the exams of one of the most substandard collegial educational system in the first world, I believe we are about 39th on the list, of which most of the information taught is to train us on how to follow these rules instead of knowing and learning the actual laws. And if your level of education is defined by the amount of money paid in order to receive a less than prestigious diploma, stating grade level and accomplishment, then I'm happy to say that I'm a college dropout. I am self-educated to the point that normal conversations with doctorate-level graduates equate to a conversation with a child who still believes in the Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, and the Easter Bunny, simply because that is what they are taught in the corporate indoctrination centers that we call schools. Rational thought, self-awareness, and sovereignty is not taught in school, and law is certainly not the prevailing wisdom in law school. Then, when you realize that everything you see in the movies, television, and on the news is specifically designed to uphold the illusionary state of unconsciousness that most of us live in regard to our debt slavery, That's the point where normal conversation, as defined by the media-driven society, becomes almost unbearable. And fitting in at parties becomes impossible. I'm now the crazy guy. The one talking out of my butt. I'm the one who, despite the beauty, glory, and not to mention the fact of the information I try and relay, I'm labeled as the negative one, the downer. And so I'm the antisocial one, the one who doesn't go to parties, the one who cannot do small talk. And I'm the one that cannot keep normal friends simply because normal means brainwashed. And normalcy is not freedom in any way. The friends I have made are necessarily informed, or at least curious, somewhat awake, and want to learn what I have already learned, or at least want to teach what I'm seeking to learn. When you do meet these people, you develop a friendship and a trust that is unknown to most, kinship through shared plight. And to anyone reading this or listening, I have only this to say. I may not know you. You may think that no one really knows you. But I hope that you haven't reached the point in your life where you've given up, where you've lost all hope, where learning was something you did as a teenager, and where happiness equates to blissful ignorance. I hope that you won't let these corporate monsters force you to be a victim of this. I hope this reaches you with the spirit it was intended, and I wish for you the best in whatever you do. A sheep you are not, for you've read this far. If you'd like to learn more about the information I've shared with you here, I would suggest that you seek out this man, Tim Turner. His seminar can be found in the following links, and I would highly recommend that you listen to these and take notes, as if you were in school again. Real school. Old school. Mr. Turner is a righteous man who practices everything he preaches. This seminar is both enlightening and empowering in its revelations. It's long, and it will take you time to comprehend the power of this message. But it is well worth your time. No amount of money can pay for the knowledge that this man presents here. If you can go to one of his seminars, he will provide all the necessary forms and walk you through the paperwork to claim your sovereignty. Mr. Turner brings his seminar to a different city every weekend. He has things to say that everyone should hear. His website with the dates and locations of these seminars is here, americacanbefree.com. One more disclaimer here, I am in no way affiliated with this man, Tim Turner. I give you this as a gift that was given to me, passed on by a friend. This man, and many like him, want you to know this information and ask that you pass on this gift to someone else. And that brings us to the end. Now, here's the Tim Turner seminars. There's 3 days worth, and they're quite long. What can I say? Live free or die a slave. This is Clint Richardson on Thursday, February 26th, 2010.